Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, August 16th, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me.
You got any whiskey? How about you give me a glass of whiskey?
That's a little early in the day for me, but you go ahead. We're back today with part two of my conversation with a true original, the incomparable burlesque talent Jessie Bell Jones. This second part of our conversation comes to you as part of the Sex Edge Ucation podcast series because, as I explained last week, Jessie is a twofer.
You really are stupid, you know that?
That's why I don't encourage drinking at this hour. And here's some absolutely astonishing news. Part one of my chat with Jessie, which appeared here last week as part of the Erotic Mind podcast series, is officially the most popular interview podcast to date. It broke all download records for a podcast in a single week, and that more than doubles the previous record. So, yay for that!
You don't know nothing about it.
Well, actually, I do. In fact, I checked twice because it was such an astonishing number. Jessie invites you into her world. Visit her on her troupe's site, sinnersaintburlesque.com. Check out nakedgirlsreading.com or mosey on over to burleyconseattle.com to see what she's up to there. You'll also find Jessie on Twitter and Facebook.
So what do I got? I got no man, no baby, no nothing.
That does sound like a hard luck story, but I got to get on with this show. Today's program is brought to you by So Hard for Men. So Hard is what we in the business lovingly call a boner pill. But So Hard for Men is not just any old Viagra knockoff nocerie. It's a pure, all-natural herbal formula that improves sexual health, combats erectile dysfunction, and increases the strength of your erection when aroused. Listen, I've tried So Hard for Men, so I can testify to its effectiveness. Look for my review of So Hard for Men on my product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. Use that site's search function, type in the keyword herbal, and you can find my comments and evaluation. But the makers of So Hard for Men are so confident that their product works that they offer a 100% money-back guarantee. They also proudly offer all their first-time customers a free no-obligation trial pack. This is an amazing opportunity for you to test the product on your own. Get your wood the natural way. Look for their handsome banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show.
Jessie Bell Jones, thank you for making your way back here to Dr. Dick's nerve center.
Thanks for having me back.
I have no nerves, but the center does. Anyhow, we had such a wonderful time chatting last week, and I learned so much from you, and set me to thinking about all kinds of things that I would like to ask you this week. So let's pick up precisely where we left off. Last week we talked a little bit about the resurgence of classical burlesque and how it's become a huge phenomenon, not just here in Seattle, but internationally, I'm assuming. What do you suppose gives rise to that resurgence?
That's an interesting question. I think that there are a few factors that play into the popularity that burlesque is enjoying. And I would say that not just classic burlesque,
okay,
but that burlesque of all flavors is certainly on the rise right now and enjoying a lot of popularity. I think that changing ideas about feminism and celebrating female sexuality are contributing to its popularity. Mm-hmm. I think that acknowledging and celebrating and performing one's sexuality is becoming a more and more okay thing to do for the liberated woman to experience instead of this idea of protecting or withholding that so this might be contributing to its rise in popularity. It's a fun, relatively inexpensive night out for in the case of many shows.
Mm-hmm.
So in the light of current economic trends, I think that going to a burlesque show that only costs $10-$15 is still a wonderful night out that allows you to enjoy a show and enjoy ambiance.
It's fun, but
also accessible, economically accessible. But accessibility in an artistic and intellectual way, I think, is another reason that burlesque has really taken off, because it's often a package in which we're able to discuss with our bodies important issues to ourselves regarding politics or sexuality, religion, so many profound themes are expressed in burlesque acts. But because burlesque is the act of taking something very significant or heavy and making light of it, we're able to package these very strong statements in a way that's digestible to an audience and to other performers. It's a vehicle in which we can have a dialogue about sometimes very uncomfortable topics, but expressing them in a way that's entertaining and using humor and sexuality to temper the blow, but still allowing us all to start thinking about things that are on everybody's mind. So
you know, as you talk, I'm thinking back. I'm old enough to know, been around, you know, like in the early '60s. I think it was the very first burlesque show that I ever saw, and you know, I was a very young man, probably not even a man, a teenager. And it was a smoke-filled room, and it was, you know, a bunch of loutish men, you know, yelling at the performer to show us their tits. That was it. Now, what you're talking about is fundamentally and significantly much different than that. It is so much bigger. It has components that, you know, we talked about this briefly last week about philosophy and sexuality and psychology and empowerment of women and queer culture and all this kind of stuff that, you know, is being blended together nowadays that didn't happen in the 50s and 60s.
Sure. I think there is definitely still a show us your tits element present.
Because we like them.
Right? Who doesn't? but I definitely agree with you that the demographic of our audience is so vastly diverse now. There are women in our audience. There are married couples in our audience.
Right.
There are
gay men in your audience.
There are gay men in our audience. Sometimes they don't like it. Sometimes they do. We're so lucky to have a wider audience base of people who are looking for all sorts of different things.
Right.
I mean, yes, burlesque is sexy and scintillating and
naughty.
And lusty and naughty. And if that's what you want to go get out of it, you know what? The titties are still there. But what's wonderful about burlesque now is that it's also become this vehicle, like I was saying, for discussing topics with an audience and using theater and glamour and spectacle to convey these ideas to people.
Right.
So it's become, you know, it's become a place to see titties, and it's become a place to think about philosophy, the philosophy of titties, right?
Right.
I also think that it's appealing to we see so many women in the audience. I think it's appealing to women in the sense that it's exciting to watch another woman on stage really owning space.
Right.
Taking up space, taking up presence, and saying, this is my body, it's beautiful, I'm sharing it with you.
Mm-hmm.
I am a fierce sexual mama, and you're all under my spell right now.
It's so true. It is absolutely so true.
So I think that has drawn so many different people, and I'm so happy to see such diversity in the audience.
So feathers and sequins and makeup and shoes and keys, they have got to be loads of fun. Is it playing dress-up even more fun when you're an adult?
Oh my gosh. I play dress-up for a living. How can my life be any better? You know, that's funny. I actually was not a dress-up kid.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was a top button sort of kid, and what I mean by that is I wore long sleeve shirts all the time and buttoned them all the way up and wore jeans in the summertime and was very was very nervous about that sort of thing as a child. My my mom in later years even made fun of me for it when I told her, I think I'm going to start doing burlesque, when it was coming out to her as a burlesque performer. And I mean, she was shocked, but not in the how could you way, but in the you're finally going to take your clothes off way. As a child, I mean, I don't know if I was uptight, but I certainly wasn't a big dress-up fantasy player kid. So maybe I'm overcompensating, right?
Making up for lost time.
Yeah.
I love it. Much of neo-burlesque is considered performance art. Is there is that a different take on things than, or a different mindset than classical burlesque?
There is a discussion out there in the world about art versus entertainment.
Right.
And there are people of differing opinions as to where burlesque falls, into which category, into both categories, into neither category. So that discussion exists in the world. That being said, I feel like my experience in burlesque is an artistic experience.
Right.
I feel like what I make is art.
Right.
I feel like what I do is art. And because I'm a performer, it's performance art,
right?
But there's also the art of making a beautiful object that you're going to wear on stage. But but yes, I would definitely consider my work in burlesque to be performance art.
Mm.
I generally lean toward neo-burlesque.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of complicated plot lines and these characters that are going through these strange experiences. However, there is so much merit to really well done classic burlesque.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that is extremely challenging to hold space with just the power of your presence and the power of your personal beauty.
And besides, on top of doing all of that, you're actually taking your clothes off in an artful sort of way. I mean, I know very few people that can take their clothes off in an artful sort of way, you know, in their regular life, let alone on stage. And so when someone makes it look so easy, like it's just falling from you, you know, at your will, then that tells me that's art.
I feel like there is certainly an art to classic burlesque as well. Even though neo-burlesque tends to be grouped more with performance art than classic burlesque does, I think that it is an expressive and powerful art in and of itself.
Speaking of which, this is predominantly an art form for women, but there is an increasing number of men joining the ranks, and this is called boylesque. Is that right?
That's absolutely right.
Cool.
Although I will say that boylesque is a term that not only and encompasses male-bodied or male-identified people doing burlesque, but also has started to encompass elements of drag in burlesque.
No kidding.
Actually, there was a BurleyCon panel about this, and I feel like boylesque is a term that's still very much in development in terms of what does boylesque mean.
Yeah.
But I think in a nutshell, we could say that boylesque certainly does offer male-bodied or male-identified people a place to perform and develop burlesque acts, persona, burlesque experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also extended to female-identified individuals who are playing with masculinity on the stage.
Yeah.
So boylesque is a term that's still evolving and expanding and changing in its definition. There was actually a BurleyCon panel about it. What is boylesque? And we didn't come to a conclusive definition by the end of our, whatever, two-hour slot. But it certainly is a term that's coming into use, and I'm so glad that it's existing, because I think that it's opening lots of really exciting doors for gender play in burlesque, for developing more complex gender identities in characters and in ourselves, and for opening the playing field to more people who
it's
otherwise...
The surprise of it all, too. You know, I mean, if somebody's on stage and you think it's a woman, or you think it's a man, and, you know, in the course of the performance, you realize that you maybe have read something more into what
you're imagining. An experience like that would be very exciting. And sometimes there is that sort of bait and switch element, and sometimes the gender identity of a performer will remain static throughout a piece.
Right.
But yeah, boylesque definitely is, it's here, and it's growing, and it's really exciting, and it opens a lot of doors for different gender expressions of all sorts in the burlesque community.
Would you consider something like Chippendales? Is that burlesque?
You know, I've actually never seen a Chippendale performance.
Uh-huh. But here is a group of men mm-hmm. who take their clothes off.
Sure. And that's an interesting question. What is and is not burlesque? For me, burlesque involves an element of personal expression.
Uh-huh.
It involves an element of tease. And it involves an element of fantasy.
Interesting.
And I think that, not to get woo-woo, but I think that the artist has to define intention for themselves
right,
and make
good.
That intention clear.
So self-identification.
Mm-hmm, and I actually exactly. don't know enough about Chippendale performance or culture to imagine it in my mind and say, yes, this is burlesque, or no, this is not burlesque. But I certainly think that male strippers can move in a burlesque direction
right.
as well. I don't see why that's not available to them. I think that personal intention and execution would be a big part of determining whether or not we were seeing burlesque.
Okay.
I'm certainly not a judge of it,
okay.
though.
So let's talk about music and choreography. Mm-hmm. Are you solely responsible for these things in your performance?
That depends on the performance. As I mentioned earlier, I am part of a troupe. I'm part of Sinner Saint Burlesque, and we perform group numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm in a group choreography, or for example, the choreography that I was performing in Shine,
right.
We have a choreographer, and we work together to learn this material and perform it. However, for my solo acts, which comprise the majority of my work, yes, I'm absolutely in charge of my choreography, music selection, costuming. Everything is an individually decided endeavor. There's the element of workshopping sometimes
right,
that happens at
yes.
troupe rehearsals, but the bottom line is that, yes, I choose my music and I design my choreography.
Where does your inspiration come from? I mean, is it do you hear a piece of music and go, I can take my clothes off to that?
You know, inspiration comes in a lot of different forms for me. Sometimes there's a character or a concept that's really nagging me that I would really like to give life to
no
and to bring
kidding.
Out to the stage. And so concept sometimes drives
mm-hmm.
the creation of a
right.
piece, and you have this idea living inside of, and you finally hear some music, you're like, oh, this is the music that I've been waiting for to hear
mm-hmm.
this. And it can come from the other direction as well.
Right.
You can hear a piece of music that you just really groove to,
mm-hmm.
that you really just want to share with an audience, that you think tells a story,
mm-hmm.
that you find engaging, that you think informs your body in
mm-hmm.
interesting ways to move. So I think that inspiration can come from multiple sources, those being two of them.
Mm. Do you have specialities? Do you sing as well as dance?
Specialities.
you know, make bread, you know.
Sing. Having just been in a musical, I feel like I should say that I can sing, but it's definitely not my forte. I minored in vocal performance in my undergrad career, but that was a long time ago. I enjoy singing in the shower very much.
Performances are moving in a more fetish expression as of late. We mentioned this last week that burlesque is, you know, crossing the boundaries of, you know, the fetish and kink communities as well. Are you seeing leather or latex or other kind of fetishy kinds of stuff in people's performances?
That's an interesting question about whether or not it's moving in a direction or
at least being incorporated.
Right, being incorporated. I'm in the personal and social position to have kind of overlapping worlds with the kink fetish community and the burlesque community. So I see a lot of incorporation of these things. Whether or not this is an overarching trend
mm-hmm.
in the national or international
right.
burlesque scene, I'm not sure if I can speak to that. I do think that the longer that burlesque exists, the more innovative performers have become, and that these innovations sometimes involve the incorporation of new elements of kink, or references and ideas involving more colorful expressions of sexuality,
mm.
whether this is queerer burlesque or kinkier burlesque
mm-hmm.
or more fetishy burlesque. I think that this is just a result of the fact of there being more burlesque.
Right, right,
people,
right, right.
I mean, people taking it in new directions,
right.
in all directions.
Mm.
So certainly one would expect to see more of this just because of the fact that there's more out there
right.
proportionately.
Right. How is your life in burlesque impact affecting your relationships? Does it get in the way? Does it enhance? I mean, are men saying, God, I'd never date a burlesque queen? Or, God, I would love to date a burlesque queen.
Well, for one thing, I have zero free time anymore. I feel like, if anything, it's made me a less available person temporarily, not necessarily emotionally.
Right, right.
But it's made it difficult for me to connect with people in a way that's satisfying to me. But as far as people approaching me and saying, you know, I could never be with a performer, or I would always want to be with a performer, I guess I don't really encounter that sort of reaction from people. It just hasn't come up in discussion with anybody. Or maybe I've just never said to somebody, so do you think you could ever be with a burlesque performer? I find that...
Oh, did I mention that I do burlesque?
Well, and because performance has become such an all-encompassing part of my life,
right.
I find that I almost exclusively have been spending free time with people that I'm performing with. So
right.
it becomes not a very significant thing to be...
Exactly.
...going and grabbing a cup of coffee with a friend of yours who's also in a show, because... Who else do we? You
right.
know, who else are we around right now?
Exactly.
I miss my other friends, but.
What's the most challenging article of clothing to remove in a graceful manner?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I think that how the release on that article of clothing is designed is really going to affect that. I mean, there have been bras that snap right off for me, and then there have been bras that I've had to wrestle with for 30 seconds.
Which gets me to my next question. Has Velcro revolutionized burlesque?
Yes and no. I think that Velcro is very useful for some things, but Velcro is a very dangerous substance when it gets around fuzzy things,
right.
or nylons, or fishnets,
because
it has a tendency
yeah.
to cling to things. So Velcro is very deceptive in the sense that it promises ease and then becomes a very, very complicated relationship. So Velcro certainly can be useful for very quick releases and a secure connection, but I think it's important to be mindful where you're placing Velcro.
Right. So your performances are so fluid and sensual, and it appears so effortless. I'm sure it's not, but how do you create that illusion?
I would say rehearsal. Rehearsal, rehearsal, and rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
I think that the little five-minute section that we get on stage...
Is it really just 5 minutes? Seems much longer.
Oh, you know, I keep saying 5 minutes, but some people 3.5, some people 7.
I see, got it.
Because
okay,
we choose our own music, this is often a flexible sort of thing, but I would say average 5 minutes for a burlesque bit. Certainly in shows that have running storylines, or some of the nightcap shows that that I've been seeing, there are beautiful long montages where
right.
people are on stage for quite a while and doing wonderful things that take up much more than 5 minutes.
Right.
And then I've also seen very, very short performances
mm-hmm.
that are maybe 2 minutes long, but so packed and
right.
so profound
right.
that you're still just so touched by them. So 5 minutes is just an average. But anyhow, fluidity and ease, I would certainly say practice.
Mm-hmm.
Practicing something until it becomes second nature. Practicing something until you could do it in a hurricane with one of your eyes poked out and a couple of fingers missing. Practice.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. I mean, very few things come naturally or easy to me on the first try. I certainly do my share of work.
Do you ever feel sexual tension with your audience?
Ooh, what a delicious question.
I guess.
Yes. I would say yes is my initial answer. Not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly am bringing a sexual presence to the stage, and the audience is participating in this sexiness with me.
Right.
I very much feel like burlesque performance is a back and forth between
right.
me and the audience, and that no performance is ever going to be the same as any other, because they bring as much meaning and energy to it as I do. So in that sense, I am participating in something sexy with the audience.
Right. It's different than if you were playing the cello, for example.
Well... Considering the curves of a cello, I don't know.
I love it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if it's unlike anything, but I can certainly say that my experience in it is a very communal one, a very sharing one. And I feed off the audience, and I think that it's a very cyclic, like phenomenological sort of thing.
So is that, that's why like MCs are often, you know, encouraging the audience to participate by, you know, whooping it up and stuff like that, which you would not necessarily encourage an audience at a cello concert.
Sure. Well, and actually, that's a very interesting question or point to make, that the MCs encourage a lot of response from the audience. And I think that a big part of why MCs at burlesque shows encourage an audience to cheer is because audience members seeing burlesque for the first time sometimes aren't sure what's an appropriate response.
We're
sitting in an audience, we're seeing this woman take her clothes off. Mm-hmm. It sometimes can feel very personal and very vulnerable for an audience member and an imagined vulnerability for the performer. And sometimes when we're seeing something like this, even if we're enjoying it immensely, it doesn't seem appropriate to catcall. It doesn't seem appropriate to whoop. And I think that as popular as burlesque is now, that's less of an issue. But that certainly sometimes people need a license to catcall.
Because it's not part and parcel of going to theater or any place else. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't stand up and say, "Oh, and by the way."
It's a different experience to be in a burlesque audience where your vocal participation is acceptable. Mm-hmm. It's okay to yell something during the middle of an act as long as, you know,
It's respectful.
and that this kind of interaction needs to be licensed by an MC.
Right.
Now, whether that's appropriate or not is a question I think that every MC can answer for themselves.
Right.
But certainly I think it's important for an audience member to feel like they have the right to catcall.
Right. Well, you know, I we talked about this a bit more last week in your participation in the musical Shine, the burlesque musical Shine, and I loved being part of that audience because it was so natural. It was just so natural to, you know, to really participate with. Not only was it natural, but it was, you know, it was so organic. You know, it was an organic kind of thing. Like people could hardly stay in their seats, you know, and not call out and, you know, get wrapped up in, you know, the expressions that we were seeing there on the stage. And it was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful.
It was so exciting to hear that kind of spontaneous response from the audience, too, especially during the end of a couple of Lulu's numbers.
Right.
We would be backstage in this thunder sound would start.
Absolutely.
We would know that people were banging on their chairs and stomping on the floor, and it was just so exhilarating to know that that the audience was just spontaneously exploding. Well, not spontaneously. Lulu certainly
see, called
ignited
it out.
That.
That's right.
I'm so excited to see what happens in New York with it.
Mm. You are so pretty and so svelte, and how do you stay in shape?
Thanks. I think being busy keeps me in pretty good shape, actually. I wish I had some secret workout regimen. I have a gym membership, but I haven't seen that place in months. I feel like Shine has kept me in pretty good shape.
Oh, for goodness sake, yes.
I really enjoy moving. I think that burlesque is a way for me to celebrate and explore my body by showing it to people, but it's also burlesque and dance in general is a way for me to move in a way that's meaningful to me, and I think that just the joy of use encourages me to move often and move enthusiastically, and that seems to keep my joints happy.
Right. Is there a therapeutic aspect to burlesque? And the reason that I ask that is that I'm thinking that there are some people in our audience, both women and men, who, you know, would be thinking to themselves, you know, I would really like to try that, even if it's just for my partner or in front of a mirror by myself.
Sure. I think there's absolutely a therapeutic aspect to burlesque, as there is to nearly all art. I think that the creation of art is a very personal thing, in that we have to reach into ourselves and pull things out if we want to bring them onto the stage. I would certainly say that there's a difference between writing in your journal and writing a novel, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes therapeutic art happens at home and mm-hmm. stays at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that burlesque is a wonderful venue for me to work out personal issues, as I'm sure it is for everybody.
Right.
But that it's also important to be mindful of your audience when you're bringing things on stage. Am I writing in a journal in front of my audience, or have I written them a novel?
That's a beautiful analogy, by the way. That's really
but,
great. Thank
but
you.
I firmly believe that therapeutic art should exist in the world, that people should allow artistic expression to be part of how they work through issues, part of how they process the world. Whether or not that art goes on a stage is a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly I think that people should be encouraged to express themselves in ways that are therapeutic to them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if only in the privacy of their own bedroom.
Exactly.
But express
exactly.
yourself, damn it.
Exactly. Exactly. Finally, who are your inspirations and your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Well, I talk a lot about gender being performative. I think that I was an undergrad when I first started thinking about this, and I was reading a lot of Butler, which is super whatever cliche, but she really inspired my foray into burlesque because I was so fascinated with the ability of a person to have so many different genders on stage.
Mm-hmm.
My burlesque 101 at the Academy was a kind of draggy act, and I would also consider the hyperfemininity that I expressed to be a drag of sorts. So gender outlaws, Kate Bornstein, gender theorists, Judith Butler, certainly inspire me in terms of the work that I'm trying to do in burlesque. Mm. And I hope that I'm able to do their theoretical work performative justice.
How interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the theory behind burlesque is really fascinating to me, and the theory behind gender expression is really powerful to me, and that In my personal work, it's a goal to think about these things, about the different genders and different identities that I'm bringing to the stage.
Interesting. Well, that concludes it for today, too. We are out of time, and I could go on and on. You are so charming and so delightful and so thoughtful and reflective, and I really appreciate it. But before we go, would you give us your website address again and walk us around? Like, do you have a main website, and does it link to other places?
I actually don't have an individual performer website.
I
would encourage people to visit one of three or all three sites. My troupe site, which is centerstburlesque.com.
Mm-hmm.
I would encourage people to visit the BurleyCon website and register. And I would encourage people to check out nakedgirlsreading.com.
Because there are naked girls reading, basically.
Right. Although I don't believe that there is much nudity on the website. There's maybe a little. Not safe for work sort
right.
of stuff, though.
Cool beans. Well, thank you so much, Jesse, for being so forthcoming and open about this very intimate information. I appreciate you being so generous with your precious time, because we are all the richer for the experience.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a joy.
Be well, and keep taking those clothes off.
Thank you. Likewise.
Well, you know, I think you have stirred something in me. I'm going to go upstairs and perform in front of my full light mirror.
I hope it's therapeutic.
Thanks, kiddo.
You're
be
welcome.
Well.
Bye.
What a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next time for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
You tell me the story, and you act like you know what it means. But I can see what the true story is, and you can't.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here, then. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is So Hard for Men. I know what you're thinking. With so many herbal supplements on the market that boast fast-acting results, it's hard to know which erection-enhancing formula to choose, or if one shouldn't just avoid them altogether. I always tell my clients to beware of bogus claims and dangerously adulterated products that abound in the marketplace. So Hard for Men is different. It's made of 100% herbal extracts. It's as effective as any medically prescribed drugs I've tested, but it's much kinder to my system. There are no headaches, unsightly flushes, upset stomach, rise in blood pressure, or altered vision. In my years-long search for the holy grail of herbal erection enhancers, I have found only one product that consistently delivers on the promises it makes without any of the nasty side effects. So Hard for Men improves genital blood circulation, which assists in achieving and sustaining a strong erection.
You can't see what you are, and I see everything.
You just won't quit, huh? As you know, every human body is unique, and each of us metabolizes what we consume in a slightly different way. So keep that in mind when you use So Hard. And just so that we're clear, So Hard is not miraculous. It will not override an unhealthy lifestyle, but it can positively affect our sexual response cycle, making us more easily aroused, as well as more energetic lovers. So look for the So Hard banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com. One final thought. I hope you are also following my two other interview series, which appear on Wednesdays. One is the Sex Education series, where I converse with prominent practitioners, educators, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles, and we investigate the world of fetish sex and kink. The other is called Sex Wisdom, and here I chat with researchers, educators, clinicians, pundits, and philosophers who are making news and reshaping how we look at our sexual selves. I can assure you that these conversations will be worth the time you spend with us. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.